Michigan voters will determine two of the seven state Supreme Court justices coming up on Election Day. Incumbent Republicans David Viviano and Joan Larson and their challengers all appear on the November ballot. Currently, Republicans hold a 5-2 majority on the Michigan Supreme Court. Joining me now to talk about the race is someone with a pretty good view of the legal system, Shayna Roths, our newest reporter with the Michigan Public Radio Network and a former county assistant prosecutor. Shayna, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having
me. Great to have you here. I do want to talk about the Supreme Court race. That was really the reason we called you originally about this. But there were some number of developments yesterday regarding the situation in Flint. You covered a Senate vote yesterday that may create a couple of very significant measures for the city. What did the Senate approve yesterday?
So the Senate essentially passed through to the House two bills. One is to create an 11-member authority in Flint, and that authority is going to be charged with getting different funding for the Flint water crisis through taxing of property, borrowing money, issuing revenue bonds. And the idea behind this is that, you know, this authority can focus on the water crisis and focus on, you know, that, and then that allows city government to, you know, get into their normal everyday activities, policing, and focus on that. So that was the first one, and that passed pretty much unanimously by the Senate. And then the other one is to create this so-called promise zone. And we saw this in Kalamazoo and in a few other cities in Michigan have those. And what that does is it creates a public-private fund, which is going to give money to high school students for college scholarships as long as they go to school in the city.
Have you heard of any response from Mayor Weaver, from Jim Ananick, or Representative Kildee? How are people responding to this, if at all?
Well, the two bills are Ananick's bills, so obviously he's very in favor of them. And like I said, the Senate was really on board with them. The interesting thing at play with this legislation and then sort of this whole stuff that's going on in Flint right now is there was this report that came out by Senator Stamos. It was 2 days ago this report got issued,
right,
and it's all of this legislative, you know, things that the legislature should be doing to help Flint and also to prevent another Flint water crisis. The interesting thing, though, is that Stamos, he just kind of released it. It's sort of from the board, but the board never, or this committee that was gathered to talk about Flint, but the committee never voted on it. They never got necessarily a final say on this report that was released. So I think that sort of interplay there of, you know, what's going on with this committee and this report and, you know, kind of how are we kind of meeting to discuss what we should be doing, not only about Flint, but about how to prevent another water crisis and how to fix infrastructure is going to be, you know, kind of the things that we're going to be looking at going forward.
Let's turn to the Michigan Supreme Court now. As we said, the GOP holds the majority on the court. Let's talk about the two incumbents trying to retain their seats, David Viviano and Joan Larson. What contributions have they made to the court? What's been their impact on this court?
The court has been interesting the last little while in that they've been really chill. They've been, you know, there hasn't been a lot of infighting. They've really seemed to have gotten along, and Viviano and Larson have contributed to that. Both of them are very textual interpreters of the Constitution, meaning that they believe in, you know, sticking to the four corners of the document, as opposed to just kind of looking at it as like this sort of like living, breathing document, which is another way of interpreting the Constitution. Justice Larson, as a lot of people know, is she is on Republican nominee Donald Trump's kind of short list for a potential Supreme Court nominee if and when he is elected president. She was also a clerk for Justice Scalia. And during her time, she's been a very strong advocate for different treatment courts like sobriety court and things like that. So that's kind of been where she's been at. And then you got Justice Viviano, who has been in charge of training different judges and making transitions to different e-filing systems in the lower courts. One interesting thing I think about Viviano is that he's been this sort of champion of video conferencing, which is, you know, it takes a lot of money and it takes a lot of resources, and it also can occasionally impact safety when you have to bring different people in, you know, to and from the jails to the court system. So he has been a proponent of, you know, installing different video conferencing systems so that they don't have to keep bringing different defendants back and forth to court.
Justices Viviano and Larson each have challengers for their seats.
They do.
What do we know about them?
You know, not a whole lot. This has been a very quiet race. I'm sure there are probably some people who weren't even aware that we were electing a Michigan Supreme Court justice.
It's usually that way.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And you know, there really hasn't been a lot of advertising for them. You know, I did sort of an informal poll talking to different people, you know, about what do you know about the Supreme Court justices. Some of them didn't know that there was a race. I was very aware driving here and walking around yesterday looking for different signs. Haven't seen any signs, haven't gotten any mailers for them. But what I was able to find is that, you know, Larson is being challenged on the quote unquote Democratic side by Deborah Thomas. And I say quote unquote because we have this idea that our justices are nonpartisan. You know, they show up in a nonpartisan part of the ballot, which gets tricky for some people because if you wanted to just vote for a Democrat or vote for a Republican, unless you do your homework, you don't know what side they are. So Thomas is technically the Democratic representative. She is also in favor of more specialty courts. And she is one of those people who believes that the Constitution should be interpreted, you know, for today, for our times. And it's this living, breathing, ever-evolving document. And then you got Frank Szymanski. He has been a Wayne County probate court judge for quite a long time, and he is going to be challenging Justice Viviano, and that's
the main opposition there.
Yeah.
In those cases, we're talking about the race to fill two seats on the Michigan Supreme Court. There are two Republican incumbent justices hoping to retain their spots on the bench. Justice David Viviano is running for a full 8-year term. Justice Joan Larson is running to complete the term vacated by retired Justice Mary Beth Kelly. Our guest is the Michigan Public Radio Network political reporter Shana Roth, who covers the state capitol along with Rick Pluta. Let's take a look at the impact of some recent decisions by the Supreme Court. There's a couple in particular that were noteworthy during the last term. Back in May, the court decided on a case involving what's loosely called pay or stay. This refers to whether to jail persons who were unable to pay their court fines. And this has been a national issue as well. How did our Supreme Court, what did they have to say about this?
So our court basically said that, you know, we need to encourage judges to work with defendants when they can't pay their fines and fees. You know, they should be encouraging setting up payment plans, reducing payments, or doing community service in lieu of fines. And the interesting thing about this whole idea of pay to stay, which is kind of, you know, it's not just to kind of condense it into just saying it's pay to stay. It's the quick headline of how to explain it. But one of the things that people really need to think about is there's a big difference between people who are being jailed just because they can't pay and the idea that, you know, they're being jailed because they didn't necessarily communicate with the court or they didn't, you know, kind of explain that that they have these obstacles, that they're not being able to pay.
Okay.
There are some, you know, judges that are very, you know, strict with this. You know, you come in, you don't pay your fine, okay, that's X amount of days in jail. But there are also a lot of judges out there and a lot of judges that I've worked with and know people who've worked with who are very willing to, if you come to them and you say, hey, look, I'm looking for a job, this is what I'm doing, I just can't afford it right now, that they will work with you. That being said, you know, the court case is important to ensure that a lot of judges are doing that, you know, and have that sort of external motivation to work with defendants.
We mentioned earlier that you have a legal background. You're a law school graduate and served for a while as the assistant Ionia County prosecutor. Why did you leave the legal field and become a reporter?
For a lot of reasons. You know, I loved working in Ionia County. It's a great small county. I was one of a couple assistant prosecuting attorneys. I focused mostly on misdemeanors and different prison cases. But for me, I found that there was just something that wasn't quite there for me. You know, I really liked the investigative part of it. I liked, you know, kind of digging deep into different ideas and different cases. That was a struggle when I became a reporter in that I used to just get police reports and documents. They just appeared on my desk. And now it's like, oh, I have to file for these things. I have to go through FOIA. I have to go through this whole process to get all of this information. But really what it was is there was just something missing. I missed telling stories. I missed, you know, kind of looking at an issue from all sides of it. And when you're a lawyer, you really have an obligation and a duty to say, this is my side and this is the side I'm going to represent. So there was that. And, you know, as I was realizing this wasn't quite what I wanted to do, wasn't quite what I was expecting, I found myself driving to and from work every day listening to NPR. And as I was driving, I was just like, gosh, they tell the coolest stories.
I want to be Nina Schultenberg.
Yes, it was. And that's what it was. You know, it was just like, wow, you know, this is, you know, something that it sounds really interesting and that I'm really learning from. And I want to be that for people. And a friend of mine, I was, you know, kind of explaining what I liked about the law, what I didn't like, what I was missing. And they were like, well, why don't you be a journalist? And I was like, well, that sounds really cool. Mm-hmm. And luckily, I was very fortunate to have an incredibly supportive family who, when I said, I want to leave my job and go back to school yet again.
Invaluable
yes.
support there.
Yes.
We are glad you could carve out some time to join us here today. Shayna Roth covers the Michigan legislature for the Michigan Public Radio Network alongside Rick Plutus. She's also a former Ionia County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney. We've been talking about the Michigan Supreme Court. Thanks for making time for us today.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.